You're listening to BGO Blind Pig, BGO's official roundtable discussion of all things DC football. Come pull up a chair, pour a libation of your choosing, and join in some passionate DC football debate. BGO, a Burgundy and Gold obsession, is the most passionate, intelligent community of Washington football fans on the web since 2009. Join us at www.bgobsession.com.
What's up, gentlemen? Good to see everybody again for yet another therapy session known as the Blind Pig, courtesy of bgobsession.com. After a wonderful Thursday night demolishing on Turkey Day, before we get going, we'll get into the intros. Top left is Mark. On the board, he hails his Ohm. Bottom left is Bob. He hails his Neophyte. Bottom right is Chris. You can find him as Chris. Top right is John. He hails his Boone. And my name's Derek. You can catch me at Silent Threat. So jump on the board. Let us know what you think. Interact. Please give us a shout. Every week we have a thread dedicated to this podcast, so you can give us feedback. We love to hear it. So I guess the first things that we can talk about, John, you have a little segment that you started, right? Pick one thing you liked and then a couple things that you didn't like. I guess we can tee it off on Thursday. What some things that we liked on Thursday?
I didn't like that. The result that we had in front of 93,000 plus fans in the stadium in Dallas, and apparently it was the third most watched NFL regular season game in history, which
on CBS,
which blows my mind. So I guess I'll flip it to make it a thing I liked is that a lot of people got to see our quarterback, who, as Kevin Sheehan, I thought he did a good job of basically what Kevin Sheehan said this week was Sam Howell almost single-handedly kept us in that game for three quarters. Not that it ever felt like we had a chance to win it, but we were in it. I mean, it was still 20-10 after a scoreless third quarter. Mm-hmm. They didn't score. We didn't score. So I liked that Howell's getting a little bit of airtime and doing well under the big lights. Not perfect, but he did well. I thought Curtis Samuel had a good game. One thing I didn't like, Terry McLaurin, I don't know what's going on there, but I think he was 4 of 11 for like 50 yards, and maybe they just were all over him. I'd have to go back and watch it again. And I'll just tell you right now, I'm not watching it again. But anyway, I just feel like they got to find a way. We got too many really good wide receivers to be able to shut down one of our guys, especially Terry McLaurin. And there are a lot of other things I liked. I mean, we had a big offensive play advantage, like 25 more offensive plays. We blew them out in time of possession, 37-23. But the defense couldn't hang in there. I mean, just talk about total collapse, 25 points in the fourth quarter. So that's what I got. What'd you guys like?
I liked that Sam Howell again showed the stages in too big for him. He had the one interception, but I think that was at a point in the game that we all can agree that the outcome had been determined. At that point, it's not that it doesn't matter. You don't want to see the interception, but the game was well in hand for Dallas. It was almost panicking, taking risks you don't normally take because of the score. I liked that our defense for a period appeared to actually show up and play football. I can probably say for the first half, both units appeared to be in the same game together. Now, that doesn't mean we were firing all cylinders, but neither one was completely dreadful. And there have not been many halves of football this year that we can say that. Dallas is a far superior offensive team. They're one of the best offensive teams in the league. So to allow 20 points to them in the first half on ultimately a couple blown plays is not something to hang your hat on, but it's also not something that's, specific to you. They're doing that to everybody. So I know that's kind of a pessimist way to find things you like, but there wasn't a lot to like about it. But yeah, to John, your point, Sam Howell did everything he could do to keep us in that game for three quarters, and he didn't fall apart when the lights were brightest, I don't think.
I won't beat that dead horse. I like that Sam had a bounce back game, which is what he does, and did nothing to hurt his stock going forward, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe helped it some in that incredibly difficult environment, right? On a team that he's got to feel like he's just a man on an island, right? He's just getting swarmed, and he knows he's going to have to score because the defense isn't going to keep him in game. So credit to him. And I guess at the risk of sounding really snarky, this isn't intended to be, but I liked that we, as undermanned and poorly coached as we might be, we showed up to play. Yeah, it got ugly at the end, but this wasn't one of those games like the Bears were from the opening kickoff. You were like, you know, they just got steamrolled. They showed up to play. I like that the team seems to be staying together. More specifically, I liked what I saw from Curtis Samuels. I'm really pleased that he's come on, and I mean, I don't know enough about what's going to happen in the next year, but he's made a pretty strong case for being a guy that you want to keep around here. I like that. Beyond that, guys, it was pretty tough. It was pretty tough to take, because games are won and lost in the fourth quarter in the NFL. We all know that. And I mean, John's right. We were in it. We were in it on the scoreboard through three quarters, which is probably why a lot of those people stuck around. I think people were interested in seeing Sam Howell a little bit, and it's Dallas, you know, and Dallas, when Dallas is good, they draw national television audiences. So we showed up on the big stage and people got to see what the young quarterback's about. But beyond that, it was hard to find a lot of things to really like.
This is going to sound snarky, and there's no way around it. Well, I'll say it and then I'll throw the caveat out there. I like that it was Jack Del Rio's last game.
I'll drink to that.
Having said that,
emphatically his last game.
I am never a fan of anybody getting fired, right? I mean, I've been part of that meat grinder several times in my career. I know what it feels like. It doesn't matter if you know it's coming. It doesn't matter if you kind of wanted it. It doesn't matter. You know, nothing matters. Jack sat at home Friday afternoon and felt lousy. And I feel for the man in that regard. But anybody that listened to this pod back in January felt like I wanted a change on both sides of the ball for the coordinator position, that I felt like, you know, Jack needed to move on in January, that he'd done everything he could probably do with this defense the way things were going. And my biggest gripe all year long has been that it felt like every week was Groundhog Day and we were on the insanity train doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. And you know, I don't know that I expect Ron Rivera to be better. I expect Ron to be different, though, and I expect Ron to actually try some other stuff. I was also fairly happy that Wieselmeyer went with him. I feel like we took a real step backwards in the defensive secondary this year. I don't know whether that's been because of injuries, because of what we, you know, how we drafted, or guys just getting older, like say in the case of Kendall Fuller.
Well, there's been no lack of investment.
You know, exactly. There's been no lack of investment in the higher rounds of the draft. But, you know, we've also heard venerated guys like Darryl Green say that it doesn't look like the guys are getting the coaching that they need in some way, shape, or form. And I heard a bit, you know, I heard Doc Walker talk about that a little bit this week. And Doc has apparently talked to Darryl about it. And Darryl wasn't necessarily taking a swipe at the coaches so much as the fact that apparently, while a lot of really good things have taken place with the alumni since Harris took over, one of the things that isn't really taking place is connecting existing players with guys that played that position from older regimes, which is something that per Doc's comments, I was left to believe happened quite a bit under Gibbs, that guys had older fellas who had been there and done that to go to and talk with, you know, sit down and, as Doc put it, you know, grab a beer, chat it up, right? Just not so much coaching as it is, you know, hey, look, this is how I handled that, and this is what I did, and maybe you should try this a little differently or whatever. And that really isn't necessarily happening at this point in time. And so I guess maybe that's one of my downs, although that's not part of the game. Another up, which is really going to surprise people, was Dak eating turkey, because I feel like that really kind of put the exclamation point on the embarrassment. And if Ron Rivera wasn't feeling it at that point, and if Ron Rivera wasn't feeling it before then, he needed to be feeling it then, especially after the game when Dak came out and basically went, you know, we've had this plan for 3 days. And I thought about doing it to score before that, but then went, nah, it's not quite right. We'll have another chance. Talk about knowing you've got the other side outclassed and basically coming out and stating it. I'm not a big one for locker room, you know, bulletin board fodder, but man, if that's not up on the bulletin board before the last week of the season, somebody missed the boat somewhere. And I guess I got to plug Sam. Not only do I feel like Sam came out when the lights were bright and played a really great game, Mark kind of alluded to it. I feel like Sam, we expected the defense to carry this team while Sam learned this year. The reality is Sam is carrying this team. We're not winning, but it's not because Sam isn't performing. Sam is doing everything he can do to bring home a W. And most weeks with an average defense, he's doing enough. You know, we really should have a winning record this year. If this defense were 70% of what people projected going into the season, with what Sam has put up, we'd have a winning record and we'd have a playoff spot. We'd be in a playoff position right now. I cannot fault the young man. And my frustration factor, here's my bad thing for the week, has nothing to do with the game. It has everything to do with all the chatter about a top five pick and do we take a quarterback? What? We've got a guy that's proven he can do it week in and week out. Take an offensive lineman, get the boy some help. There you go. Chris?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We want to make sure that you don't miss out on any future BGO Blind Pig podcasts. On our YouTube channel, simply hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to BGO Blind Pig via Apple Podcasts or another podcast provider, go to our description page and click that follow button.
Oh, okay. What did I like? The game turned out about how I expected it was going to turn out. So I like that it took until the fourth quarter for it not to be over instead of at halftime.
Or earlier.
I'd like to just talk about the turkey leg sideline situation quickly. I have never been one to expect any segment of class to come out of that organization. But I just finished watching Bye Bye Barry, which is a Barry Sanders documentary that just came out on Amazon Prime. And, you know, Barry would score touchdowns and he would either just politely hand the ball to the referee in the end zone or nicely toss it to the referee in the end zone. And it came back, you know, his saying was, act like you've been there before. Dallas acts like they've been there, but they haven't been there since 1992, 1993. So I think it just showed, put an exclamation point on what I already think about the organization and think about the team and think about how they think of themselves and how, for some crazy reason, people all over the country think about them. I know this is on YouTube, so I'll be careful and say, you know, fuck Dallas.
No, careful.
Felt like that team in its current incarnation is kind of like a front runner, a bully, right? When they're beating up on somebody, they got all that stuff
watching a 77-year-old Dolly Parton sing "We Are the Champions," forgetting that in fact they are not the fucking champions. So anyway, I just wanted to bring up one other thing in the game, and I may not have all the facts right, so feel free to correct me. But I did not like, I think it was the first drive we had in the fourth quarter when we were still well in it. And we had the ball down on our end of the field. We went for it on fourth and one from our own 34-yard line. Sam had already got sacked once on that series. He sacked four times, two on the same series. And the second sack of that series was on the fourth and one, and which made it Dallas's ball on our own 24-yard line. Of course, guess what they did? So I don't know. If I had the backbone to go and watch that game again, I would look at that play again and just try to figure out maybe the situation was different than it is, you know, in my head with just the one watch with a couple beers on board, because you got to drink beer if you're going to watch Washington play in 2023. But anyway, I thought that was a pretty questionable call. I guess I know it's kind of like we felt like we weren't going to win the game unless we did something bold, but I just didn't feel like that was the call there. Anyway.
Chris, were you done?
Yes, I'm done. I don't have much else that I like.
You know what, just from the whole sense that you get, the 30,000 foot view of watching that team, even watching it when it's happening, compare them to, I scouted the Dolphins earlier today. I took an hour and looked at the condensed version of their game against the Jets. And it's just so striking. I've tried to talk about this before and I've never quite found the right words, but watching the Dolphins play today, it's so patently obvious that the coaching and the roster building and the players are all on the same page. They don't always win. They're not perfect. They still make mistakes and they still get beat from time to time. But you can just sort of see what their identity is and what they're trying to do. You get that sense when you watch the better teams. You get that sense when you watch San Francisco. You get that sense when you watch the Chiefs. Sometimes you get it like with Dallas when they're beating up on somebody. You get that sense. When you watch the Commanders play in bursts, you'll see it. For a quarter, you'll see it. For parts of the game, you'll see it. And then it just disappears. So it reminded me yet again of how poorly constructed this thing has been. And it's not just under Ron Rivera, but that's what we're talking about now. The guys who do the scouting and make recommendations are probably doing a great job on their own. The coaches might be doing a good job from time to time. The players do, but they're not all working together. And it's just never been more obvious to me than it has been as this season has fallen apart, that the Commanders are not constructed right. They're not all on the same page and pulling in the same direction, all those cliches. I think when and if we ever get that here again, it's going to be really, really striking to watch how you can get that momentum going during the course of a season rather than just showing up and every week is tooth and nail and hoping that the ball bounces your way. It just drove it home big time. And I have a funny feeling we're going to see that the rest of this year too. Watch for that when you watch the team and see if you see bursts for a quarter here and there when everyone seems to be on the same page and working together towards something.
So one thing I was thinking about as you were talking, Mark, is, and I think a lot of that has to do with coaching. It probably has right now a lot to do with the fact that the players know these coaches are gone. So there's kind of I think you lose something as a team, which is why I don't think we're going to have a late season run like we typically have, because there's just something that's been taken. The air's been taken out of the balloon a little bit. But I just, the thought that I kept thinking about as you were talking was, I feel like we just don't have a bunch of alpha males on this team. And I think most teams that are really good have on every unit, they've got two or three alpha males. And by alpha males, I'm not talking about like guys screaming and yelling. I'm talking about guys that when a play needs to be made, they're the ones that make it, you know. London Fletcher leaps to mind just again today.
Sean Taylor.
Sean Taylor. But I just
the Bosa brothers, you look at Myles Garrett, you look at the defensive back Butler, a whole bunch of Lamar,
Fletcher Cox in Philadelphia. I mean, even at his age, he's still that guy, right?
We're gonna see some on Sunday, guys. We're gonna see Jalen Ramsey. who mm-hmm. is as close to Sean Taylor out there as I've seen in a long time. And I don't use that lightly. Tyreek is a freak, and he's an alpha. He's a little guy, dude, but he plays so big. Yeah, John, I think that's very fair. I don't know how much of that comes from the atmosphere that the coaches set, right? And what it's like in the locker room. And I also think that teams, I mean, here's another cliche, teams take on the persona of their head coach. Mm-hmm. Ron is this on the sideline. And I'm not blaming him for that. That's his way. But it doesn't lead to a team with that's just bursting at the seams with alpha males all really wanting to win or die. I just don't see that with as a team. I don't see that.
Yeah.
I hope in free agency, we go after some of those guys, even if they're not the best players at the position, but guys that have experience and are, you know, have that fire. And I'll point, I know I don't want to get into a Cole Holcomb conversation, but that was one of the reasons why I hated them letting Cole walk, because he wasn't the best linebacker, but the kid brought it every game and he played his ass off. You tell me that right now, who's playing their ass off on our defense? Cause I don't see anybody. I mean, Davis had a play in the game, but I just don't see it. I think we lack those kind of guys, man.
I don't know. Maybe my feelings are misplaced. I feel like John Allen brings it every play. I just feel like it's hard to do from the defensive tackle position, especially when the offense knows we're doubling your ass 70% of the time you're on the field. You know, John's dealing with 650, 700 pounds of muscle every single time the ball gets snapped. And it's very difficult to be that guy that just makes a play at will. You are his whole job. I mean, most of the time seems to be absorb the pressure so somebody else can go make a play. And if that other guy doesn't go make a play, it's got to just eat at him.
He's certainly been that kind of a player, right? Up until this year, it's not happening for him.
It's the rare defensive tackle who can take over a game. I mean, I'm trying to think of the Mount Rushmore probably has Reggie White on it. Maybe Warren Sapp.
Aaron Donald is on that.
Aaron Donald is on it, but it's a pretty mm-hmm. short list of guys who can still take on those double teams and win.
Warren Sapp used to.
Yeah. Yeah. John, you're right. Or the idea of him taking on these taking on guards and a center and occupying blockers so linebackers can make a play. Well, we don't actually have linebackers.
He's usually also good for one or two plays a game where he just flashes. Allen. Yeah. He had another one this past game where he was just in the backfield in a second and tackled the running back for a loss of yard, if I'm remembering correctly.
I'm glad he's going to be here for whoever's coaching this defense next year. He's a pretty solid guy you can start to build a D with.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, if you enjoy the BGO Blind Pig podcast, you may enjoy the video version. Visit YouTube and search BGO Blind Pig to access over 100 previous episodes. However you enjoy BGO Blind Pig, we thank you for listening.
You know, he's quietly having a relatively decent year. I mean, I haven't pulled it up against everything else, but he's got 5.5 sacks. He's the current leader still on the team in terms of sacks. You know, as opposed to the guy lining up next to him who was a sack machine last year who only has 2.
So those are some of the things we didn't like.
Yeah, or did like.
No. Yeah. So we're the buzzsaw is coming into FedEx Field on Sunday. What do we have to say about that?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So Jack Del Rio is no longer here, and not only is our sometimes how can I put it charitably, our head coach, who may not always be the most engaged human being on the sideline, is going to be wearing 2 big old hats this weekend. And his first live fire test wearing these 2 hats is a team that is playing offense like very few people have ever seen offense played at a speed that I'm just going to be fascinated to see how that plays out.
2008 was the last time he was a full-time defensive coordinator. That was with the Chargers. And he may have called some defensive stretches when he was with Carolina. I don't know. I'm not I haven't studied Ron Rivera that much, but
I did go look at that, John. I was curious. He called the last four or five. He was the defensive play caller, not the defensive coordinator, because they had a defensive coordinator in name. But Ron took over the play calling for the last four or five games of the 2018 season. And then he called the entire 2019 season up to the point that David Tepper relieved him of his responsibilities.
So it went well, in other words.
The defense, from what I can tell, the defense was playing all right. It wasn't the defense wasn't the problem there. The offense wasn't, you know, but that was also, if I remember correctly, Scott Turner's first year as offensive coordinator.
Well, and Rivera had Sean McDermott as his DC for like 7 or 8 seasons in Carolina. So those guys, I mean, you can remember the games we played against the Panthers. They were, their defense was always tough and swarming. So it was probably a lot easier to take over that defense than the one he's taken over this week.
You know, he also coached the, as the defensive coordinator, I don't remember which year it was. It was one of his first years as a coordinator. He coached the number two defense in the league. Chicago went all the way to the Super Bowl and lost to Indianapolis. No shame in losing to Peyton Manning, but I mean, he number two in scoring and number two in yards, if I remember correctly. So the man's got some pedigree as far as, you know, being a DC is concerned.
The problem is, how long is it? The offenses are 100% different than when
he. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I have a couple numbers for Mr. Rivera, in his upcoming assignment. Everybody knows that Miami's got a high-powered offense. I mean, any team that scores 70 points in one game has a high-powered offense. But for the year so far in the NFL, their rushing offense is number 3 in the league. Yards per attempt is number 1 in the league. Yards per game is number 2 in the league. Their passing offense is number 1. Yards per game, number 2. Completion percentage, number 3. Touchdowns, number 2. So are Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle scheduled to play this week? Because yeah, that's going to be that's a baptism by fire waiting to happen.
They've got this other guy, Mostert, who's on my fantasy team, who isn't too shabby either running the ball.
They got the number 3 rushing offense and the number 1 passing offense.
I listened to you rattle those numbers off, Chris, and I've got a comment that was made on the Junkies this week that I just can't get out of my head listening to all that. And that comment is, you really got to hand it to Ron Rivera. It was really brave to fire Jack Del Rio before the Dolphins came to town. He could have legitimately waited another week, let the Dolphins blow everything up and escape this, but he faced it head on. And
this is the weekend that the Dolphins are coming to
FedEx. Yeah, that's where I was going, John. That's where I was going.
I thought it was the next week.
So yeah. Just a weird little quirk around this game, and it's a little scheduling quirk. So our last game was on 11/23 on Thanksgiving. We play on December 3rd. We don't play again until December 17th. Which means we had three games in 11 days, and then we will have one game in almost 4 calendar weeks.
23 days is what – one game in 23 days is what I heard on the radio earlier.
So it's just this weird oddity of the way schedules work. Like, not to sound really bad here, but could you imagine if we were hitting this stretch and we were in contention?
Yeah.
I mean – this would be a godsend. This would be something everybody wants.
People will be complaining about Washington getting favorable treatment from the league. Because you know that happens a lot.
I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is every one of the Dolphins' 3 losses have come on the road. The bad news is that was against the Bills, Philadelphia, and the Chiefs. Those are the only losses on their schedule.
Yeah, but FedEx Field, man, that's a tough place to play.
Well, is it cold?
Yeah, for the guys in burgundy and gold.
It's going to be cold and it's going to be raining, apparently.
Well, you know, us Southern Florida boys, we don't like that cold or that rain.
Didn't I say that?
I heard today, since we're talking about Miami and the track meet, that the five, they got the all the next gen stats. One of them was that the five fastest recorded times on the field this year for a player, I don't know what their metric is, the top five are all Miami Dolphins.
And one of them's Mike McDaniel.
I mean, running off the field.
You know, Mark, while you were talking earlier about teams taking on the persona of their head coach, is there a more sarcastic yet chill but arrogant guy at the podium talking to the press? I mean, Mike McDaniel just oozes a chill confidence and that athletic arrogance that people talk about, except as a coach. It's a cerebral, yeah, I'm smarter than all of you people, and I'm smarter than the guy on the other side of the field on Sunday too.
Mm-hmm.
And so far he's backing it up, and the team plays that way.
There's a buy-in there. I don't know if you guys have discovered it yet, but they're the Hard Knocks in season that I just discovered yesterday features the Miami Dolphins, and it picked up in mid-season, like after game 7 or 8. And I've gotten a chance to watch just the first episode. And I liked McCarthy before. I'm like, I got a little bit of a man crush on that guy right now. Not because of how he presents himself, but the way that he's got sort of the vibe and the mood that he sets in the locker room and for his players. I highly recommend, because it dovetails nicely with what I was trying to say before about teams and identity and all that. There's a guy who's building an identity on that team. He wanted fast guys, and he wanted a point guard quarterback who could do things like the little blind shovel passes, and everything is like the running game is it hits this, you know, this isn't delayed handoffs and, you know, 6 yards deep like we do time after time. Every run has got a different timing. They're hitting different holes, and they got a thing going on. And it makes me, on the one hand, a little mad and frustrated that we haven't had that here in recent memory, but looking forward to the fact that maybe that's where we might be headed next year with the young coach and analytics and the whole idea of let's operate on a 21st century pace.
Well, it's also irritating because he was on the Washington Redskins staff 3 years. And just like we didn't recognize what we might have in Sean McVay, if we could figure out a way to get him at the top of the food chain, nobody saw him coming. He had two or three stops after us before he got a chance as an offensive coordinator. Mike McDaniel.
Oh, McDaniel. Yeah,
McDaniel did. McVay went straight into it. Mark, listening to you talk, I'm struck, and I've been struck a couple of times watching Miami play. It reminds me of the Showtime Lakers in full flow. It's just the football version. And you know it's coming. You know it's coming. You know they are just going to fast break you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, the one downside to them being on this in-season edition is that one team that we're very familiar with is going to have a big role in it in a future episode.
Oh, I'll be watching. Well, maybe.
So we got to talk about Tua, man. Tua is a guy that I thought might have his career ended with another headshot. I really thought, like, he's won. And you know teams know that, and you know teams are going to go after him to an extent, unfortunately, because that's how it works in the NFL. But the guy has had an incredible season. He's 70% completion rate, almost 70%. 22 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He's only been sacked 17 times in the entire season. That's like two good games for us, or two or three games. I mean, it really is.
Not wrong.
And the thing about Tua is he is no longer like a RPO guy at all. He's only run for 40 yards the entire season. So he's doing it all with his arm, not his legs, which is even more impressive to me.
He's extending plays really well. And he is also, I heard this stat yesterday, I believe, is number one in the league in getting the ball out quick. It's like under 2.4, which is apparently, I haven't seen the metric, but it's by far the best in the league. And you're going to see that on Sunday. They don't dick around. They don't take seven step drops and read, although you might be able to do that Sunday. But he takes a step and the ball's out. And you're going to see those fast guys getting the ball in space and see if we can tackle.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We want to make sure that you don't miss out on any future BGO Blind Pig podcasts. On our YouTube channel, simply hit the subscribe button. If you're listening to BGO Blind Pig via Apple Podcasts or another podcast provider, go to our description page and click that follow button.
So, looking a little bit at Miami, if there's one place that there's, I don't even want to call it a weakness, but a place that you can exploit a little bit, it's their O-line. They've been having a lot of injuries along their O-line, apparently. But honestly, like, not to sound completely terrible, I don't know that I have a lot of confidence that our D-line can do anything with it, because we couldn't do it with the Giants or with some of the other struggling O-lines, but...
Like I was saying, Tua is not going to be sitting back there waiting on the rush. I mean,
no, he's not.
Well, they give up a lot of red zone plays. That's probably the only thing, just looking at the stats, that jumped out at me. Their opponents have been like 65% in the red zone. Of course, Miami has been 75% in the red zone. So when you're,
well, you can be 65
quarters of the time in the red zone.
Three touchdowns with the regular.
It's going to be interesting to watch the dynamic with Ron versus McCarthy, like in the first half, because McCarthy has no idea what kind of defense Ron's going to put out there. There is no film to study. There's nothing. I expect that I'm hoping that we'll probably look pretty competitive defensively early in the game. My concern is as the game goes on and we go into halftime and they have a chance to look at what we're doing and scheme things up, it might get away from us a little bit. That's kind of how I see this one proceeding.
Are we going to go Tanya Harding on Tyreek Hill on the way out to the field or something? Because who the hell is going to cover him?
Is Galuli out?
He's already questionable, but he was questionable coming into last week and all he did was catch 11 balls or something for like 110 yards and a touchdown. So who knows?
Well, and Mostert, right? I mean, they're third in the league in rushing, apparently. So, oh, yeah, they can do that, too. So what's really weird about all this, right, is I know in my heart how much fun it would be to watch our team come out and beat the Dolphins, right, because they're not supposed to do it. And it's hard not to root for your team to win when you're watching the game. But that's probably the last thing we want to happen, right? So right. Can we talk about that? It's really okay to – want your team to play well and still lose the game at this point?
I have never felt that way my entire fandom until this season.
It's the only other time, John, that I've ever felt this way. I forget what year was it 2000 when we knew we were bad and we were going to have the number two and three. We ended up with the number two and three overall picks.
Samuels, that was the Carlos Rogers draft, right?
That was LeVar and Chris Samuels.
Okay, yeah, LeVar.
Just remember that was the first time in my life I had ever said, I want my team to lose the rest of the games, and I've never gone back there either until about 2 weeks ago.
I will never root for Washington to lose, but I will not at all be disappointed if they do.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's 100%. I can root for them to win, and I can fully understand how the long-term benefit of the team is increased with a loss. So I guess we can kick around. The popular conversation right now in this area, local DC area, is head coaching candidates. And I think we need to get a GM, and I think Harris is probably going to hire a GM before we really need to start talking head coaching candidate. But I do want to ask you guys, and I think I know the answer, but offensive or defensive head coach, what would you prefer?
I don't care. I don't have a preference. I mean, it's an offensive league now, but we've seen what happens if you can't play defense either, right? So bring me a good head coach and then solid coordinators on both sides. I'm not really all that concerned about which side of the ball the head coach comes from. I never really understood that.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't. I mean, if you put my feet to the fire, I would probably say an offensive coach. And I will say this. I want somebody fairly young and energetic. I want somebody that can connect with these guys.
Yep.
We're seeing the most success in the league with guys in that Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel age range, right? I mean, Nick Sirianni's in that range. You know, that just seems to be, with the exception of Andy Reid, you know, the storied old man. And I think he just has a special connection with that team. Of course, any team would have a connection with a head coach that had led them to multiple Super Bowl trophies.
And who has the current GOAT
right
quarterback.
Yeah. And maybe contender for all time GOAT. I mean, he's still fairly young and he's slinging the ball as well or better than anybody that's ever played the game right now. So I want somebody that's not tired, not jaded yet, which is part of the reason why, I mean, if we're throwing around real names, one of the names that scares me the most that I keep hearing is Jim Harbaugh. And I'm not interested. I'm just really not interested. I'm not to say that Jim is a bad coach. He's not a bad coach. He did great things with San Francisco for 4 years, but it felt like San Francisco was a little bit of a circus while he was there. And I'm not interested in bringing that circus to town. I want less circus, not more circus. It's fairly well documented that he and his brother mix kind of like oil and water to a large degree, I think. And do we want them 60 miles apart in Baltimore and Washington? I think that's a bad idea. So it's part of the reason I want somebody young is to stay away from Jim.
Derek, do you have a preference? I think what it would be really nice to look at is to go down through the league and list the teams that we consider successful. And I mean, if 9 out of 10 are former offensive coaches, I might change my mind. You know, if there's some evidence that it makes a difference.
Well, I've leaned offensive coach. I've thought, you know, I'd love to have an offensive coach marry a head coach with your quarterback. We have not had that marriage. We have not had that true marriage since Shanahan and RG3, and it went off the rails. But
it was kind of an affair.
But what I meant, the system was defined for the quarterback, and the head coach was the one that implemented the system. And then I was listening to the radio today, and Grant and Danny actually brought up a really good point. They said, offensive coach 100% of the time, and if no other reason than the simple fact, if you have a defensive head coach and he gets a good offensive coordinator, chances are you can only keep him for a year or two because then he's going to get a head coaching gig.
That's fair. Yeah.
So
the other thing is you can't just, it's a lot more complicated than the question as it's being posed. It's a good question, but if what if we don't go GM? What if we go head coach / GM? Well, then you're looking at guys like Belichick and Rivera, who that's how we got to 4 number one draft picks on the
defensive side of the ball. And that's the other
argument. No offensive line and no quarterback for 4 years. And Belichick has the same struggles where he can't get out of his own way on offense. So, but there's probably examples of guys that have been defensive head coach / GM who have succeeded. But I think it also depends on like, what is the role of the head coach in the organization? Because I think if he has a lot of power and influence, then that could be more of a problem if he's too focused on the defense. But anyway,
well, I think all of us would agree that we're not in the coach centric game this go around.
You're not, but Josh Harris.
I know. I can't speak for him.
This could be the first time he has, right? In any of his different ownership ventures, that's not the way he's gone. He's kind of a corporate structure guy.
Right. And I think bringing in Eugene Shen, who is a guy that specializes in analytics, I think that a lot of that can show you that there is going to be structured. You know, there's going to be a structure to it. It's not going to be the GM reporting to the head coach and the head coach having the final say. At least I hope not. I think it's a disaster. Well, I think it's a mistake to go that route.
Yeah, I would be shocked. I would be shocked if they went that way. I even think, weren't there, there was something floating around out there in media that people close to the Harris organization had said that that's his whole idea, is to build a GM and coach and all that. I thought I actually heard something to that effect.
Baldy had an insider tell him that.
It makes too much sense. It tracks with everything. All the evidence that we do have based on the way Harris does business is that's how he's going to do it.
Yeah. Ideally, I would like to see a young up and coming GM and a young up and coming coach. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see them. I would like to see two guys that work well together, that form a strong bond and create that Bethard Gibbs dynamic here for the next decade,
where everyone seems to be pulling in the same direction, right? And there's an identity. And yeah, bingo.
Yeah, to circle back to where this conversation started.
Yeah, and that's what's been missing here for 20 years, 30 years. We just haven't ever had that here long enough for it to get rolling. It took Sirianni, 2 years? And his marriage with, was it Roseman up there?
Howie Rose.
It's working. And then all of a sudden they're bringing in players and they're loading up, and they could sustain that for years because they've got it where they're all on the same page and working in the same direction. Josh has to find that here. He has to find.
He better be the smart guy that we believe he is. Cause we've also seen teams go through that cycle 6 times in 12 years where they just keep recycling the next up and coming GM and the next up and coming coach, and it doesn't work.
You're right.
You mean
you're
like right. Carolina?
Well, among us, I mean, that's just one
of the Raiders.
I want to see, I want a general manager, though, that has control, final say over the players, not two guys that work really well together. And then maybe the coach has final say on the roster. We often use Bethard and Gibbs as an example of what to do. But from my understanding over all of the years, there was many times where Gibbs was very frustrated with Bethard because Gibbs wanted to make decisions on players and Bethard wouldn't let him. I don't want a coach that's picking his own players that has the final say.
It's right, Chris. It's such an obvious dilemma, right? Because the short-term versus long-term needs of the team are represented very differently by a GM and a coach.
What's different from the Bethard Gibbs year is coaches weren't getting fired after a season back then. Yeah. They just didn't happen. You got 3 or 4 years and then you get fired if you were terrible. But so that's a lot different, because now the coaches really don't have the long-term. They're just set up not to be concerned about the long-term because they probably won't be long-term.
Yeah. Well, like Frank Reich just got let go after 13 games?
Yeah.
There must have been some other dynamic at play there. 11 games with a rookie quarterback.
Well,
there must have been something else that was going on there.
The latest rumor that Tepper tried to come out and squash today actually was that Frank Reich and the coaching staff wanted C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, that's what
I heard. But Tepper apparently put his foot in and said, no, we're taking Bryce Young. We're not taking C.J. Stroud number one overall.
So Reich may have given one too many I told you so's.
And you wonder, like, how many times did he have to go to a meeting on a Tuesday morning with the owner? And Tepper's like, what's going on? You know, because I'm sure they met. And he looked at him and, well, if you would have let me pick my quarterback, we wouldn't be in this position. You know, like, how many times do you think that conversation happens when you got a guy who's an MVP candidate playing for a perennial dumpster fire that has apparently turned that team around in a blink of an eye?
You know, I don't know how many of the rumors are true. And I need to stress that everything we're hearing is pretty much rumor. I mean, I don't know that I trust David Tepper's word at this point in time, and we won't hear anything from Reich because his contract buyout is tied to keeping his mouth shut more than likely. I heard that mentioned today, you know, that Frank's not going to say anything for several years because he's got money riding on keeping his mouth closed, and it's a lot of money. So there's no reason for him to talk at this point in time. But you know, the more I hear rumor wise about Carolina, the more Carolina feels very much like Washington circa 2000, 2001, 2002, where Dan Snyder felt like he could play fantasy football with, you know, his new shiny play toy and get what he wanted. It feels like Tepper is playing a little bit of fantasy football down there, to the point of one of the rumors is that he actually was passing plays to the offensive coordinator that he saw other teams run in other games and he thought looked really cool, and he wanted to see him run in Carolina. And
the guy's already fired one Charlotte coach. Now he's added another one. I'm still waiting on a Charlotte Football Club head coach. So God knows that may be like a year away. And now that he's got,
does Tepper own the Charlotte Football Club? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. That's news to me. Wow.
He also fired Matt Rhule in a year in the same season, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. After giving him a big contract.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a fat payout. Not quite, you know, Jimbo Fisher payout at Texas A&M, but pretty close.
Well, but so that's not going to be a preferred destination, unlike your Washington Commanders, apparently, which are going to be the hot destination.
They might. Yeah, I heard that conversation. A lot of people are slating them number two behind the Chargers.
Yeah.
The thought process is the Chargers are going to move on, but they have Herbert, and that's the tilting point.
You know, and I don't think I want to get anywhere near the Chargers. It feels like there is an institutional block with San Diego. They've got all the talent in the world, and for whatever reason, they can't get past the same point in the road year after year after year. They've got one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league, and this was a big topic of discussion in one of the junkie sessions this week, too. Would you rather have Justin Herbert or Sam Howell? And one of the guys was like, Justin Herbert all day long, and I forget which one of them it was. He goes, really? Because I feel like Herbert's a loser. He puts up great stats, but at the end of the day, he doesn't win football games.
He's on a crappily coached team. We know about that.
Well, and that's what he said. Then one of the other guys was like, well, yeah, he's on a crappily coached team with no defense. And the first guy went, and Sam Howell's on what again? You know, I mean, it was a great back and forth. It was comedic, except it really hits you right where it hurts.
It does seem like, and I'm trying to step back and do this objectively, which I obviously can't do, but if you are a guy looking for his shot as a GM or a head coach, and the historic franchise from Washington, D.C., which has been in the darkness for 30 years, mm-hmm. is looking to suddenly resurface and become relevant again in this market, you're going to be getting a new stadium. You're going to be getting a chance to build a new practice facility. Wait until you see what the Miami Dolphins practice facility looks like on Hard Knocks. And compared to what you've seen from Ashburn, you start to understand why we are the last rated team in terms of what the players and coaches think, because it's a dump out there compared to the other franchises. It's hard not to picture Washington, and that's not even to mention the five picks in the first 100, et cetera, et cetera. It's got to be a destination. And if Josh can't make hay out of this one, you know, he really needs to make hay out of this one.
Well, and the other thing is the resources that they're walking into. They're walking into a building where there's only $6.5 million in dead cap money. Like, nobody has $6.5 million in dead cap money. $90 million you can spend on free agents, plus five of the first 100 picks in the draft, two of the first 35.
Yeah, very likely. I got to agree with Nikki Javala, though. $90 million is going to go a whole lot faster than any of us.
It will. It's
going to disappear really quick.
I think a big factor that makes it more attractive than we recognize is there's no emotional attachment to anyone in the building or on the practice field. There's literally, I mean, Sam Howell might, maybe. Terry McLaurin, maybe, but that GM, yeah. Whoever, and that head coach, they're walking into a situation where they can do whatever the fuck they want, and no one is going to tell them they can't do it.
No,
that's fair in the NFL.
And you're all... you get a fourth place schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it's all lined up for them to have a chance to put something in place. And by the way, you can see there's evidence in the NFL of how quickly you can turn things around. And I was thinking this week about, I know we're going to run, we don't want to run too long here, but the two teams that jump to mind of how quickly you can turn things around if you get the right combination. One is Houston, who was predicted to compete with Arizona for the number one overall pick again this year. And they've not only gotten themselves respectable, they're in playoff contention and playing good football one season. We laughed at the Denver Broncos earlier this year in week three. They gave up 70 and everyone's like, Sean Payton, you know, has lost it. Look at that team now in the last few weeks. That's coaching and taking advantage of what resources you do have, maximizing them and getting everybody working their asses off. It can happen. It could happen here.
Well, and I'll throw another name out there for you, Mark. And it's a team that's been one of the proverbial laughingstocks of the league forever and ever and ever. And that is the Detroit Lions.
Detroit, yeah.
Look at what Dan Campbell and I wish I knew the name. I should know the name of the GM up there. But you look at what he and the GM up there have done in all of three seasons. His first year, they had two wins. Then they went to like playing roughly 500 ball last year. And this year they're leading the division and they're going to have a home playoff game at the rate they're going. So everybody laughed when they traded Stafford for Goff, and all Goff is doing is playing Pro Bowl ball right now. So.
And they didn't fire their head coach after 11 games.
No.
So are we going to be bold and make predictions for this Sunday, or is it a kind of a pointless exercise?
Yeah, let's do it. But for the record, the Detroit Lions general manager is Brad Holmes.
Wow. All right.
In his third season as their GM. Nobody knows about him, but he's obviously doing a hell of a job.
Where'd he come from, Mark?
He had a background at Michigan. Believe it or not, I clicked it away. I'll put a link in the thread tomorrow for those who are keeping score at home.
My prediction for this weekend: there will be pain. And that Al Davis's quote: there will be pain.
I think that was Mr. T's quote. Oh. One of the Rocky movies.
What's the score, Bob?
Oh, God, I think it's going to be another embarrassing one. I really do. I think Dallas might be the only team in the league playing better offense at the moment than Miami, but it's a close thing. And Miami's got team speed that we just have never seen before. So I'm going to say 40-17. Their defense has been allowing some numbers, and I think Sam will have a pretty decent day against the Miami defense. I just feel like that, you know, the law firm of Waddle Hill and Tua Tagovailoa is too much.
What about you, Chris?
I think it's going to be similar to last week, but in reverse. Well, not total reverse. Just
you think it's going to start ugly and
I think it's
slow down.
I got Miami 44, Washington 24 with the game basically over by halftime, and then we put some points and some yards up and stuff when they're not that interested anymore.
John?
I have us losing 31-14, and that's really just a endorsement of Sam Howell. I think they will lose interest because I don't think it'll be a very competitive game. The score won't be as bad as we might be fearing, I don't think.
What about you, Mark?
I'm kind of coming at it from where Chris is. I think they're going to come out fast breaking and try to get a lead on us, because I mean that's what I would do, right? You get this team down, you figure it's probably not going to be able to come back on you. I think they're probably down by 14 or something at half, and it ends up I think they'll sit on the ball and run it in the second half, the Dolphins, and slow the game down. And it probably ends up, I'm going to go 35-16. 35-16 feels about right.
Wow, I'm the one that's usually like negative, and I think I know. I mean, I agree. I think we're going to lose. I got 34-24, and the 24 is just late. I think they jump out early, and it could be 34-14 going into the fourth quarter, and we all understand the game is out of hand, and then 10 fourth quarter points or something goofy ends up making it look a little closer than it actually is. But yeah, I think we're all on the same page.
What's the storyline next week? What's going to be the big story after this game?
It's going to be NFL mock drafts and who's the next head coach going to be, because we're going to be going into the bye week.
Going into the bye week, right?
So I wanted to let you guys know I'm not going to be available the rest of the week. I'm going into my sensory deprivation dark room for 3 days.
Did you pop your Achilles and you need to?
Where I'm going to be telepathically communicating to Aaron Rodgers not to be a complete dumbass and try to come back from an Achilles tear in 3 weeks.
So, yeah, we might see him on Christmas Eve. That's the date that they've got circled on the
calendar. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of in my life, but hey.
I'm with you.
If 85-year-old Aaron Rodgers can come back that fast from an Achilles injury, it wasn't the Achilles injury people thought it was. That's all I've got. There's no way.
No, he's just old enough.
Achilles injury, no.
He's old enough. They just cut it off and just tied his foot up so that because he doesn't figure he needs it anymore.
Bad idea. Very bad.
Oh, all right, fellas. As painful as it is, it's therapeutic to sit down and talk to you fellas every week. And thank you for sharing in the misery. It keeps us going throughout the season.
We're getting there, fellas. We're getting there.
That's right. Have a good night.
Night, guys.
Thanks for listening to BGO Blind Pig. Join us next time as we once again dive into the ups and downs of DC football fandom. And don't forget to check out our incredible community of Washington football fans at www.bgobsession.com.